Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. I'm Anne Nicholson. Next week, Opera in the Rock is gracing the stage at Arkansas Rep with its production of Puccini's Madama Butterfly. Listeners may remember we heard from Arkansas Symphony Orchestra Associate Conductor Jeff Robson on the fusion of the East and the West in the opera's score. This week, we speak to the show's director, David Ward, and Opera in the Rock executive director, Kate Sain, about the delicate intersection of music and stage direction and how to stretch emotion to show the sorrow and determination of Puccini's best-known work.
I was here for Barber of Seville two years ago.
Right, yes.
And I directed the Barber. We did it out at that technical school. It's got a beautiful theater out there.
Been a nice hall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Though I have to say, we're going to be at the Rep downtown. What a beautiful space.
Yes.
We were in there. The acoustic is great. And it's very intimate. So I think the audience is going to be so close to the singers that they're going to get a marvelous experience.
I hope so, because that is a great theater. And it has so much history in it. Anybody who treads the boards, I think, is aware that this is a very special place. So make it specialer to everybody.
I think we will. It's a very special opera.
Yes, and it has never actually, I think, achieved the true demonstration of how love and music make the story. And if the story was allowed to continue, it would be very interesting.
It would be fascinating to see how that little boy, the product of their wedding night, would grow up and how he would consider his Japanese culture and his relationship to his dead mother. I think it'd be fascinating. But the story that we're telling, it's a very simple story. A 15-year-old girl is introduced to this dashing, handsome American Navy man, and the marriage is arranged, and she falls in love with him. I think she's taken away. And we keep speaking about this in rehearsal, that she's 15. You know, I have nieces who have all been 15. They're not 15 anymore. But they're naive about the world, and they're also hopeful, and they're excited, and we see that in Butterfly. And she carries that through the whole show. She does grow up. I love that you brought that up. We would never expect a 15 or a 16 or a 17-year-old girl to grow up as quickly as she has to. But here she is with this baby, and she's now 18 when Pinkerton comes back, and she's been raising this child full of hope, knowing in her heart that he'll return. And he does return, but not in the way she'd hoped. And that's where the tragedy of the story lies, I think.
And the effect on the young man as well is often ignored. He comes on at the end, at the very last stage, calling out for Butterfly. But he's going to have to live a long life of regret.
I think so. But it's not unusual for young people to do foolish things when they're young, and then realize down the road, well, that was a stupid idea. It's interesting because I watch the text. As a director, I'm very wedded to not only the music that Puccini gives us, but the text as well. And even in the throes of musical and romantic passion at the end of the first act, Butterfly is talking about bigger, more grand ideas about love and beauty. And he's talking about himself. And to me, that reminds me of what a young man is like. It's all about me. And it's very interesting because Pinkerton is sort of a cad. You know, he loves her and leaves her, and it's not very nice. And in his opening scene with the consul at Sharpless, he even says, "I can't wait to go back to America and marry a real American wife." So he's taking advantage of this young girl. And I don't think it's malicious. I don't think he's a bad person. But the results of the consequences of his actions are really very tragic and very sad. So he does come off not well, and I think that's okay. We're not used to romantic heroes in opera being sort of the bad guy. But he really is.
Well, he's underneath it all, probably. He was there to have fun, do what he was told as a Navy lad. But underneath it, at the very end, you realize that he has grown up a bit, and he will grow up bigger. And it will be very interesting because he's already got an American wife.
Right.
And he's going to have to behave himself, but he wants to be able to do it with a certain amount of panache, but also with inklings of shame.
Definitely. In fact, when he returns in the third act, there's that magnificent trio where Sharpless is trying to reassure Butterfly's maid, servant, friend, Tsutsuki. And Sharpless is trying to reassure her that the child will be taken care of and Otha will be well. And Suzuki is in her grief about how this is going to affect Cho-Cho-San, Madam Butterfly. But Pinkerton is totally in his remorse, and he realizes what he's done. I have him picking up some of the children's items, like his toy and a little American flag, and he sees these, and he realizes that this fantasy is flesh and blood. And the remorse is tremendous. Unfortunately, he doesn't face it. He says, I can't face her, I can't see her, I'm leaving, and he gives Sharpless money, here, take care of her, and he flees. So he's still a bit of a cad. It's the responsibility is, I think, too much for him to handle.
What do you think the music does?
Oh, the music is so magnificent. Puccini hits every moment. You know, it's interesting. We always talk about Wagner and his leitmotifs and the musical themes that identify specific characters. Puccini's doing that throughout this opera. And it's fun to rehearse it because we'll be in a scene, I'm like, oh, that's from the first act. You know, that love theme, he brings it back when Butterfly is having tender thoughts about Pinkerton. It's fascinating to watch the way he puts it together. He incorporates the Star Spangled Banner at certain points, which I have always found thrilling in the opera house because you don't expect it. And then you suddenly hear do 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 do, Puccini incorporates that into the musical line, not necessarily the vocal line, but the musical line, and also the way he uses open. I believe they're pentatonic fifths. I could be misquoting what those are, but he uses a Japanese Asian sounding theme in some of the orchestral work, which takes us back into Japan. I don't know if you're familiar with the story, but Puccini saw the David Belasco play in New York. Puccini didn't understand a word of English, and he sat through this whole play, but he totally got it, and he took it, and he said, this has to be in my opera. And I'm sure he was, being in America, he was hearing the American themes, and there was such a fascination with Asian culture at the turn of the century, at the end of the late 19th century, that I think he was looking forward to using that. We would see that later in Turandot, when he would bring all those Asian themes into that music. It's very sensitively done.
And what are you doing in the background?
Well, I'm basically making sure everything happens on schedule and happens on time. I am producing this opera. It's my first large-scale production, and so that's been a learning experience, and my job is just to put all the pieces together in one place, make sure everybody's happy, and put out the fires when they happen. But luckily, we haven't had very many of those, so.
Has Madame Butterfly always been familiar to you, or is this new?
Yes and no. I mean, it definitely is a work that I'm familiar with, but to actually, you know, be involved in the intimate details of the piece is new. I was hired with Opera in the Rock in October of 2017, and at that time they already had plans to produce Madame Butterfly this year. So I kind of inherited this project, and we actually were given a very generous grant from the John and Robin Horn Foundation that covered our cost to do it with full orchestra. So last year we knew that we would be doing Madame Butterfly, we would be doing it with the orchestra. So we started probably about this time last year, setting, making our plans to make this happen. And we were, you know, I would say grateful, but it also was not the most, not the best situation, but it was shortly after the rep had suspended operations. And they were looking for new projects to keep their doors open this year. So we approached them and said, you know, we have this grant money, we know this production is going to happen, and we would like to have it here. So we had some meetings with Ruth Shepherd, the chairman of their board, and also with Cliff Baker, fortunately before he passed last fall. And they were all really excited to finally have opera on the rep stage. And that will be the first time there's been an opera in that space. Cliff actually said to us that that was one of his dreams when he actually opened the rep, that eventually it could be used for some opera productions. So we're excited to make that happen. And this production is actually going to be dedicated to Cliff Baker. But yeah, we just, it's been a great partnership. And then when you add the ASO on top of that, now we've got three major arts organizations all working together as one, and it's really an exciting thing. We're already in talks for our opera next year, which will be La Traviata, and you know, hoping to have those same three organizations at the table with that. We're just working on dates right now. So,
well, it just seems to me that the mood and the music, the background of all of them for special needs, special fears, mm-hmm. all not actually in the story, but magnifying it.
Right.
And I think this is something almost that won't happen again.
Yes, I do feel that way. This is very, it's a landmark production for sure, especially with this particular opera. And then also just, you know, the costumes are stunning. We were lucky to get our costumes from Opera Memphis. They have an amazing facility there. And with such close proximity to Little Rock, that's been a blessing. And I think it's just, it's kind of the perfect storm right now. So, you know, we've announced that we're doing La Traviata next year, which is wonderful in its own right, but I don't know, it may be hard to beat the magic of what we have happening right now.
And the sorrow and the joy and the story itself is much more touching than Traviata.
Right.
Puccini really, because he was sort of on the cusp of the Verismo operas, his were much more personal. You know, you think about La Boheme and this opera, it's just about simple people. Verdi frequently wrote about kings and famous people or important people or powerful people. He loved that storyline. Puccini was more interested in the little people, you know, the people of less consequence, I suppose you could say. And people often ask, well, why is opera, why does it draw you so? And I think it's because opera, and Puccini in particular, takes these basic human emotions like love and turns it into this magnificent portrayal. We get to see Butterfly go from this shy girl and then accept the fact that she's attracted to and impassioned by this man. And we see them come together in these impassioned embraces, which we see it on TV and movies, but it lasts for maybe several seconds. Well, in opera, it could last for 5 minutes. And that's one of the challenges, especially for my actors, because I'm always saying, we need to stretch. We need to take this emotion you're feeling, and we need to make it last longer. Because the composer had so many musical ideas that he wanted to share with us about how that emotion made him feel and how it stirred him. So it's just wonderful to see the way that these emotions get portrayed on stage in a way it don't happen in other art forms, not to this extent.
But also, as you say and said earlier, the rep itself is going through a transmogrifying.
Absolutely.
And all of us who love the rep and who have loved the rep for a long time, it's something special.
I also think what's special is, you know, I'm an outsider. I live in New York City. I've come down here for this. And to know of the rep's history and the struggles they had, and to see how opera in the Rock is growing. Because just in 2 years, the difference between the way the company was when I was here for Barbara of Seville and now, leaps and bounds. I'm so impressed with what Kate and the chairman of the board, Josh Price, and the other members of the board have been doing to lift the level, lift the professionalism of the company. Just to see them with the rep and the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra working together is so invigorating and exciting for me, because arts organizations struggle so much in this country. And so to come to a city where everyone says, let's work together, let's make beautiful art together, I find it very exciting. And I think it's going to be a beautiful collaboration going forward for everyone. And I just hope that they can find ways to make it work. You know, I was thinking, wouldn't it have been amazing if the rep had done David Belasco's play, Madame Butterfly, mm-hmm. and then done the opera?
Yeah.
I work in a lot of universities, and we always talk about that. We try to think, let's do the Merry Wives of Windsor, the Shakespeare play, and then do the Verdi Falstaff. You know, and those are very difficult to program. That's a big challenge for organizations. But the coming together of the arts organizations and saying, well, what can we do? Because we're all of the same piece. We're all pursuing beauty. We're all pursuing a transcendent experience for the audience.
And heartbreak.
And heartbreak, yes. Great heartbreak. You know, my first opera at the Metropolitan Opera when I was a boy was the Madame Butterfly. My father took me, and we heard Dorothy Kirsten sing Butterfly that night. Now, I'd never been in a theater that big before. The Metropolitan seats just about 4,100 people. I'd heard orchestras before, but never an opera orchestra. And the voices flying over the orchestra the way they did. I was devastated, and I was hooked for life. It didn't hurt that it was the night of the Opera Ball, and it was being sponsored by a number of Japanese companies and the Japanese embassy, so the theater was filled with women in kimonos. So I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. And ended up, I never left the opera house.
Make your own.
That's right. Which is what I get to do now. I spent 25 years as a professional singer, and I sang The Bonds and Madame Butterfly and assisted directed on the show. But now to be a director, I get to sit back and say, okay, like, how do we best tell the story? How do we engage the audience so that they can truly appreciate what Puccini has given us?
And it isn't much in the way of an audience, usually. And the number of people on the stage who have real heartbreak and real drama in front of them is relatively small. But it's got each person with its own sorrow, both in life, in the reality of what the rep is doing, what you are doing as far as an opera and a play, and it would be fun to see what you would do given the opportunity to match your own drama at the same time as the one you're working on.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully I wouldn't have such heartbreak as poor Butterfly. You know, that's also a challenge for the soprano singing Butterfly, Francesca Maldonado. She, we were working yesterday with a child. Remind me of the names, Madeline and Mary Frances.
Madeline Hunter and Mary Frances Tucker.
Those two girls are playing the little boy's sorrow, which is the child that Butterfly and Pinkerton have. And we were working yesterday, and Francesca said, and I'm crying at the table because I'm so moved by what I'm watching. And Francesca says, I can't cry. I have to sing. Because the act of crying really constricts the throat. So it's been... She's been working on that so she can function. I have an old friend who was a soprano, and she says that's the hardest part of the opera. When you're saying goodbye to the child doesn't know you're saying goodbye, but you're saying goodbye, and you're hugging the child. And this friend of mine, she's a mother, she goes, I cannot think about my children or I wouldn't be able to sing it. So that's pretty exciting to sit there and watch.
And the two little girls that we've cast are just so calm and just...
And adorable.
Yeah, adorable. They're going to be a treat to really see. They're both, I believe, 5 years old, and they're stepping into...
Madeline is 5.5.
Oh, Madeline is 5.5. And they're stepping into some big shoes to fill, to jump right in with a soprano like Francesca and have her, you know, holding them, you know, right in their face and be able to handle that with grace. And I think both girls really are going to be able to do that very well. So they really are. Yeah.
Have any of the people who've been working on it want to film it?
We are filming it, so that is definitely happening. I believe that both performances are being filmed, although I have to confirm that with the videographer. We haven't talked much about what we will do with the film yet, but it's definitely happening. So, you know, we may see if we can... I don't know, distribute it or do a broadcast or something, but it is filmed. And we have photographer for the dress rehearsals.
Quite a bonfire. The sort of thing that one hopes will never, ever be on the stage with these particular sort of excitements and find that they don't want it. That the story and the music and the people who are holding your hearts in the possibilities of everything going wrong or everything becoming exactly right. And sometimes a stagecraft is almost a danger.
That's why we love it. Yeah. It speaks to our basic nature and how we feel. And I was thinking as you were talking, life is messy. And that's one of the great things about Puccini. He lets it be messy. You know, he has imperfect people. And even we get to see Suzuki get angry with Butterfly. And Butterfly says, no, that's not the way it is. Here's how I feel. So, and we get to see Suzuki go after Goro, the marriage broker who set this whole thing up. And, you know, she tries to beat him up on stage because he was spreading rumors about Butterfly, which were actually fairly true. But the Suzuki and Butterfly don't want to hear them. So it's, life is messy, opera's messy.
And those things happen behind the scenes as well. So, you know, it's messy, but it's so satisfying, you know.
I think one of the other interesting things about opera, which one of the nice things about doing it at the Rep, is it's the last art form really that is unamplified. Every other art form, there's a microphone. And in opera, we're trained in a very special way to be able to project our sound, project our voices over the orchestra and into the hall and allow the acoustic of the hall to magnify and deliver our voices to your ears. And that was the thing that attracted me from the very beginning about opera. There's nothing between the soprano's voice and my ear except the air. And that's one of the things that I love about opera. I love Broadway. I love concerts. I appreciate the amplification. But my preference is to not have the amplification. And the great thing about the Rep is it'll just be a very pure experience, voice to ear. And I think in that small space with the audience being able to experience and live with Butterfly and Pinkerton and Suzuki and the way it makes them feel with the music unamplified, I think it's a very special thing. And it's happening less and less in this world, I think. Even the Met broadcasts, that they do the HD broadcasts at movie theaters around the world, which I think are fantastic. I love them. But they're different from an actual in the theater opera experience. First of all, because there's the microphones they need to transmit the sound in the HD. And also they have directors that are directing the camera angles. So the audience has seen a much different opera than the audience in the house. So again, it's the unique experience of live performance. And you never know what happens. There's always the danger and the excitement that something unusual will happen.
Also, one thing I'm interested to see how it finally comes together once we get into the theater. But for this particular production, the orchestra is going to be on stage. As a musician myself, and even thinking back when I was a child, I love to watch the orchestra and see what they're doing. And with this story, we've tried to make an effort to do some staging. David's worked on that, and some of our set pieces will actually be between the musicians, so that it's one collective whole. That was my goal from the very beginning, was if the orchestra is going to be on stage, I wanted it to be part of what was happening. So I'm really looking forward to next week, to getting in the theater and seeing how that works. And that will be a very interesting and unique thing about doing opera at the Rep in particular, because, you know, if we are able to continue to produce an opera there, the pit for the orchestra at the Rep is not very large, and the scale of the productions like this, there's really no place to put the orchestra, either on the stage. The Rep sometimes puts them in a rehearsal room and then, you know, mics the sound into the theater, but that's not something we would want to do, I don't believe, for an opera. So it'll be an interesting effect, I think.
And how is it going? Are the tickets selling well?
There's not very many tickets left. So if anyone's listening and wants a ticket, I would say get on that as soon as possible. You go to tickets.therep.org, or you can call their box office at 378-0405. We are just about sold out for Friday night and have limited availability on Sunday. So it's clearly something people want to see, and that's really exciting. Opera in the Rock this year, since we sort of regrouped last summer and started our new season, we have sold out every single show, fundraiser. Everything that we've done this year has either been completely sold out or even oversold, where we've had to, you know, add seats, add tables, add tickets. So clearly what we're doing is something that people around here are wanting. I think there's room for this organization, and also to have another professional company. Right now, Opera in the Rock is the only professional opera company in the state of Arkansas. We recently got a designation as being a professional company member of Opera America, which is a very big deal. There's only around 135 of those companies in the U.S., including the Metropolitan Opera in New York and Houston Grand Opera. We just are on a much smaller budget scale, but what that means is that we are doing everything in the same manner of conducting business as if we were one of those large companies. So it's very exciting, and to be the only one in the state, we want to stay alive so that we can keep this happening.
That was David Ward, director for Opera in the Rock's Madama Butterfly, and the opera's executive director, Kate Zane. There are two productions, one on May 17th at 7:30 p.m. and a matinee on May 19th at 2:30. Both are at Arkansas Rep. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.